welcome.
I am no longer sick, and as is such, the show will be less coffee and sneezy and I don't know, whatever else happens when you're sick, and as I say that, I cough. This is Bantering the Blue Shirts. We are inside of your ear, and the we is me, Beth Macklin, and Michael Murphy. Lady, gentlemen, how are you?
I'm good.
Here. Good.
Here,
sure.
Present. We are present. Great. We are all present. This show is sponsored by our donors on Patreon, who are good people, and if you are not donating, they're better people than you are. There are a lot of them.
Whoa.
They're amazing people. Their names are Anthony Viola, Matt Bader, Eric Cohn, Daniel Duchenne, Michael Silvers, Trevor Kempner, Thomas Osa, Alexander Thornton, Nicholas Forlenza, Dan Carosi, Taylor Ryder, John J. Porter, Armriel Kistner, and Zachary Zetlin. Thank you, all of you, for donating.
The guy named Patreon. Alexander Thornton sounds like someone who killed a man in a duel at the turn of the century.
Ooh, that does sound like it. Yeah. Thomas Osa is a name that reminds me of, like, a Norwegian sea captain, like an oil rig captain. And that's where that's going to be. Anyway, these people went to patreon.com/blueshirtbanter and said, we have some money that we would like to give them monthly. There are donation levels. You can go in. You can do things. You get things. You can get your own personal podcast if you really want. We got two of those, actually, that we need to we have two of those that we need to reach out and do at some point. But, yeah, you should go do it, and it will be awesome, and you will be a better person for it because you will help us either bail Beth out of jail or you will put a little money into the show and make it better. And I had to hang out with Mike's brother and Michael a couple of weeks ago, and we are working on a new show introduction that's going to be a little flashier and a little cleaner. So get ready. The show, Bantering the Blue Shirts, is coming at you, and it's coming at you fast. And Michael Silvers is an awesome person, too, just in case anybody has any questions. anywho, last week, it kind of seemed like
everything was bad. Ending.
Yeah, there was not a lot of good things last week. And this week, it seems like things are better. Because Henrik Lundqvist is better. Michael.
Well, Joe, hold on. Are you suggesting that the Rangers fans have reacted dramatically to a three-game losing streak followed by a three-game winning streak? Surely not.
I am suggesting that in
the
people in power, they would have hit the nuclear button on the New York Rangers.
Let's not talk about people in power. It's going
to
go for a hole I don't want to go down.
I would say that they, you know, it's so rare for the New York Rangers fan base to overreact. You know what I mean? It is such a rare white elk moment. Right. It's a fan base that does not get over emotional. They do not make knee jerk reactions. They are level headed and complacent, and they think things through before saying things. They never boo.
They're also our target audience, so maybe we shouldn't be just taking a big steaming dump on them. But we do love you people.
We love
how the sun rises every day.
But as someone who loves you, if you were panicked about Henrik Lundqvist,
I am disappointed in you.
I am not mad. I'm disappointed. Yeah, it will take
quite
a bit of time for me to earn my trust back. And my trust is something you want. I don't know why. You may never meet me, but it is something you want. Michael, why don't you talk about this overreaction and kind of where we are now and other things?
Well, it's been really interesting because, you know, Hank had, you know, a pretty solid game in the rematch against the Leafs. And, you know, I think he allowed two goals in that, and he looked pretty good, and it was good to see that, you know, that losing could come to an end. And then the Rangers played in, you know, a really, really flat, bizarre game, which I'm still trying to process against Detroit. But say what you will, you know, Lundqvist got a shutout. And even against a Detroit team that's really not what, you know, their historically long playoff streak's going to come to an end this year. But Tank getting a shutout after allowing two goals, and then the next day he stole the game from the Kings. And now, you know, a bunch of tweets about how, you know, Lundqvist in his first 12 seasons with 20-win seasons, and, you know, all of a sudden there's all these numbers to, you know, stand in stark contrast to his worst save percentage ever and all this other stuff. And it seems like very quickly the winds have shifted and people are already kind of saying, oh, well, he's back now. But, you know, I think that's, you know, it's, I'm not ready to jump on the everything's fine now because, you know, it's three consecutive good games, and that's great. But and historically, we've seen that December, for whatever reason, is his worst month. I think it's probably has something to do with eggnog being in overabundance. But it's a good thing to see, you know, Hank rebound. And frankly, you know, I think he just stole the game against the Kings. I forget how many shots the Rangers ended up with. I know it was under 20, which is really not good.
Seven, I don't know.
Yeah. They took like three shots. They took like eight shots and they scored three goals. But they won the game, and it wasn't because, you know, any forwards had particularly brilliant games or anything like that. It was just that Hank was that good. He had an unreal game. And that's three consecutive games where he's been kind of the Henrik Lundqvist that we know and expect him to be. And I think many Rangers fans, you know, including us at times, have been spoiled by. You know, you just expect, like, oh, yeah, this is what Henrik Lundqvist looks like, which is a goalie who will steal games against the best possession hockey team in the league. There's not a lot of goalies who can do that, especially when they're, you know, off their game and struggling. So, and especially after coming off of a, you know, I think the Detroit-LA was back-to-back. So it was an afternoon game, and then, you know, a little bit over, you know, 24 hours rest before, you know, you're, or less than that, actually. But you know what I mean. I'm not good with math, people. And then right back into the garden to face the Kings. So I don't know, Beth, are you happy that the wind shifted with Hank?
Oh, you know, it's all the same Henrik Lundqvist. We can't, like, fall into this, you know, it's not a Jekyll and Hyde situation. He's one guy. What we do have to adjust is the idea that our baseline is the absolutely exceptional goaltending we saw last night. That is not anybody's baseline. That is massively elite. And, you know, I hope that the message people take from this is, you know, that exceptional and norm are not the same thing. And maybe there will be a little less of the exceptional as Lundqvist gets older. I mean, in a sense, that's inevitable. And it is going to start sometime. And maybe this fan base, and frankly, probably the organization, have to think about how they're going to deal with that, because it will happen. It would happen to anybody. But yeah, in terms of the behavior and the responses of the crowd, you know, I can't imagine that, you know, the good cheers sound quite the same after the booing. From down in the net. And I think we just have to, you know, kind of remember that this is the same guy. And, you know, perhaps be, again, if you want to be a crab person in the privacy of your own home, you know, and do monologues to your mirror about how Lundqvist sucks and his contract and blah, 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 go right ahead. But to bring that to MSG, when you have a team that's had so many other significant issues for so long, and then to turn around on a dime as if nothing happened the next week. I mean, yeah, it's sports. Yeah, it's fandom. But seriously, you know, I feel like going into mom mode. But, you know, show a little respect.
It's like a,
be a little less mercurial.
Ooh, it's a good word. It's the heel turn happens so fast. This is, I made the comment on Twitter and actually got elicited a positive response from Steve Zappe, which is, that is like actually seeing a rare white elk, who I said, half of the people who are currently standing and cheering for Lundqvist are probably people who booed him a couple of nights ago. And Zappe said, you know, more than half and, you know, whatever. But the reality of the situation is, I am 100% for a rabid, passionate fan base that has absolute high demands. And, you know, the saying, if you reach for the moon and the stars are, maybe you'll walk away with the moon. And I get it. But I do not think it is productive. We were talking about this before the show. I have never been someone to boo. Very rarely, and I've never booed an individual player. I have booed, in my younger, less informed days, the team as a whole when they were truly terrible, but I've never booed an individual player. And it's not that Lundqvist has done all this stuff and he deserves to be free of the shackles that the people are, that we would throw onto them. I was saying before the show, I would like to believe that everybody would hold the same standards no matter who the player is. I don't care that Henrik Lundqvist has pushed the Rangers into relevance and given them 10 years of elite-level hockey where he may be the best goaltender in the league and one of the best goaltenders to ever play the game. That should not stop the Rangers from, or that should not allow the Rangers to give him another enormous extension when this contract is over. It doesn't work like that. You don't pay a player tomorrow for something they did yesterday, but there are levels of respect. And this is where nobody gets on Girardi because they don't like Girardi the person or because Girardi didn't do enough in his time in New York. It's just simply that you have to at some point make the realization that, okay, this is a player who's not worth his contract, who's not doing well in the role that's been given to him, and we have not seen any changes. And it's impossible to convey the thought that you're not being upset with Girardi, you're upset with the coach, but that's the way that it comes across. So, yes, it has been fantastic to see Lundqvist sort of rebound a little bit. I don't think there's a single person in the world who will tell you that he was not slumping along with this team, but the Rangers did not play a good game last night. The Rangers against the Kings, for whenever you're listening to this. The Rangers played a terrible game, and Henrik Lundqvist happened to be brilliant. And it was the second game in a row where Lundqvist had to be brilliant for the Rangers to win the game. And like it or not, that is the way that these things are going to go until the Rangers address this defense, which may never happen. But I saw some people claiming that Lundqvist was okay, that the defense kind of took care of him last night. That is a load of crap. And Henrik Lundqvist, I'm writing a story that if Lundqvist returns to form, will not be really relevant at all. But I hope I don't have to publish the story, or maybe I can change it. But regardless, it's sort of about how Lundqvist has watched himself become the villain in a way. And in it, I found a story from Beth last year from February about Lundqvist. And in it, she made a couple of comments that was like, oh, Lundqvist is back, relax, he's got this, and he's acting a little crazy and yelling, and in other words, being a goalie. And we're starting to see phrases in the rope. Lundqvist has always been a very steely, cold, not necessarily cold, but he's not been overly emotional with the media. He never really says anything out of place. You don't see him break on the ice. In the past 2 years, that has not been the case. You see him glaring down a teammate, saying in the media the goals aren't all his, throwing the net off the moorings. And I think part of that is there is so much pressure on him, and it's almost impossible to reach those expectations. And here's the thing, to keep me from rambling, this is the last thing that I'll say, and I'll turn it over to you guys. You can take this. I didn't notice after the game against the Kings, Vigneault made comments about, like, look at the good teams in the league. They're getting timely saves. Hank made some timely saves against the Kings. We need those timely saves. And insinuated that has been something that has not been happening. And it makes my blood boil because timely saves makes it seem like, oh, every now and again, the defense breaks down and we need Lundqvist to be there to stop us. But that's not what the truth is. The truth is that those moments happen early and often in every game. And I just think sometimes Vigneault alienates his goaltender and players who are not quote-unquote trusted veterans through the media. And we've had a lot of discussions about me reading too much into Vigneault's comments and coach speak and whatnot, but those comments like that, the timely saves comment, are not things that I can just let go, because you know Lundqvist is reading them and you know he's thinking in the back of his head, what in the flying hell has to happen for someone other than me to take the brunt of whatever's happening in the media? And Beth, you can jump in here.
I mean, what does a timely save even mean? When is a bad time to make a save? That just doesn't play out.
Yeah,
every
save by definition is timely. That's why they're called saves.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to... It does seem, even if you're trying to be diplomatic, that AV seems almost determined to take Lundqvist down a peg for reasons that make no sense to me, because why on earth would you want to make Henrik Lundqvist unhappy? But again, we're always coming back to the what gets said about Lundqvist that doesn't get said about certain other veterans. It's the word last night for some of the saves he made was not timely. It was, I don't know, they'd be all superlative. And yeah, Vigneault is not a superlative guy. He's consistent in that, at least. He can't even seem to dispense a pat on the head to the guy who's basically possibly, you know, helped him hold on to his job for a couple of years now. And again, there's a part of me that really hopes that Lundqvist writes a tell-all a few years down the road and we find out what was actually going on between these two, because I think it would be a pretty grim story. I don't know. Mike?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I don't normally have this reaction to things. I know that Joe is normally the one who, you know, gets heated up, but trying to take credit away from trying to take...
I work myself
right
into a lather.
You get all warmed up. Yeah, a warm... I almost
buttery
said frosty,
lather.
But now I did technically, yeah. All right. So trying to take credit away from Lundqvist for the win against the Kings is really frustrating. Rangers allowed 32 shots at even strength in that game, and that's just the shots that hit the net. Those were the Hank saved 30 of them, and one of the goals that got by him was with 1.8 seconds or something like that after the Kings had pulled the goalie. So no defense worth anything. And this was more a story of just the Rangers being dominated by a team that does nothing but dominate in possession every game they play. That's why the Kings always look the way they do. But the Rangers were outshot 32-17. That isn't because the Rangers forwards had the puck a whole lot and just decided to really carefully pick their shots against Jeff Zatkoff. That's because the Rangers struggled to maintain possession of the puck and that the defense led shots. And trying to take that, you know, I wasn't aware that there was a significant portion of, you know, the Rangers fans population that were trying to say, oh, you know, the D did that and this. And there were a couple good plays made by the Rangers D in that game. I'm not trying to say that didn't happen, but your goalie should never be in a game where they're asked to face in the neighborhood of 30 shots at even strength. That's an absurd amount of traffic, especially if it's not like a wide open game, crazy Pittsburgh Washington game where the score is 8-7 or whatever the hell it was, and you know, it's just a shooting gallery. This was a game where you know, I know the Rangers may have been tired from playing the day before, but, you know, very, very nearly outshot 2-1 does not, the credit goes to one person if you come away with a win. It's the goalie. So I don't really know how I feel in general about, you know, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago now, I think, about, you know, the Tale of Two Kings and, you know, whether or not we should expect Henrik to bounce back. And, you know, I've thought a lot about it, and I've thought a lot about how people get so, you know, because we've been hearing it actually for at least 3 or 4 years now, the fans, or more like 2 or 3 years, the fans who are really worked up about Hank's cap, you know, which is $8.5 million. And the thing that always, you know, gets under my skin about that is, yeah, that's the price of someone that's a generational talent. That's what you pay. That's why, you know, PK Subban, you know, there's a reason why his cap hit is what it is. You know, there's a reason why, you know, Crosby's cap hit is what it is. You know, these are very, very special athletes. And when Hank signed his contract, you know, there was still reason to believe that he was very much still had a lot of time left in his prime. And the data shows that that was true. The Rangers made, in terms of throwing money at it, whether or not the length of the term will be wise, we'll see, you know, as the years play out. But it was a wise investment to choose that this is a guy we want to make our franchise goalie. Because if you look around at his peers, the other goalies who, you know, have been, you know, the post-lockout exceptional goalies, guys like Carey Price and, you know, Tuukka Rask and, you know, Pekka, and, you know, Rinne has really fallen off a cliff from what he used to be, if he ever was really exceptional. And you look at Tuukka Rask, who's having a bit of a renaissance this year, but his numbers, you know, he's enjoyed a very good team in front of him, and, you know, he's very good, but he also demands a lot of money on the cap space, and Carey Price is Carey Price. You know, it's a very, very short list. I know some people would say, oh, Jonathan Quick, but if you look at what, you know, Budaj's numbers have been this year with Quick out, you'll see that any pretty good goalie will look great for the Kings, because that's how they play. It's a very, very small class of goalies that are anywhere near the conversation of Lundqvist. He's anomalously good. So, I don't know. It's a weird thing to hold players accountable for how much money they're making, because, you know, they do sign the contract, but they don't write it up themselves. And to bring it back to what Joe brought up with Girardi is, you know, we can very easily get frustrated with Dan Girardi, but I think I have a hard time understanding people who will really go out of their way to, you know, naysay or jump for, you know, puns about, oh, you know, king of what, or, you know, King Hellberg and things like that. I know most of the time they're doing it for shock value, but, like, the only Rangers I ever booed were guys like Billy Tibbetts, you know, who had criminal records and stuff. I booed bad people. I didn't boo, you know, players who were really, really struggling, or, you know, who were clearly not good players. In fact, I grew up loving guys who were kind of, you know, the Jed Ortmeyers of the world. Like, those were the guys who I adored, because I was like, oh my God, they're really out of their element, but look how hard they're trying. Because that's kind of the Rangers I grew up with when I was kind of at the height of my blind fandom. So, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling here, Joe. I'll let you come in and save me.
I will save you, Michael. I'm prepared. I think you guys kind of hit all the talking points in general. The reality is there's going to be ups and downs. It would not shock me if Lundqvist fell into another sort of hole of struggling, because this defense is not getting any better. This is not like guys working through struggles. This is the reality.
Well, do you think the defense will get better when Mark Staal returns? It's something I've been thinking about now. I think this is game 8. That was game 8 without Staal, right? And
yes, I'm around there.
I have to say, it's been up and down with Clendenning, but the defense, for the most part, I like what Clendenning brings more than Saul. But he's not necessarily the guy I would take out. I mean, I don't feel like the defense is going to get better unless something happens at the deadline. Is that the way you feel?
I would agree with that, because if Stahl does come back, it's going to be for Clendenning. And listen, Stahl had Stahl had certainly taken some strides forward. So in the event that Stahl comes back, yeah, I would like to see Stahl back in the lineup. But I would like to see him at the expense of Dan Girardi, which we know is not happening. And or Kevin Klein, which, again, I don't think is happening. So the problem becomes, again, I cannot say this enough. You are not saying that Adam Clendenning is the next coming by wanting to see him in the lineup. Yes, he has defensive issues. Yes, he has defensive flaws, just like everybody else on this team, sans McDonough, and even he has some of them. But he, at the very least, brings a transition and offensive game that you are not getting out of Girardi and Klein under any circumstances. So you may as well give yourself the benefit of that much-needed transition to this system than not at all. And I think we've seen this movie enough to know how things are going to play out. Vigneault's going to say it was the right thing to do, or talk about how, you know, they need that veteran leadership and whatever and whatever. And Clendenning's going to be in the press box, and eventually we're not going to see him at all. But I do think the defense could get better. I don't think they could get better to the point where the Rangers are contenders. That's going to take something like a Shattenkirk or a Trouba, or really anyone who the Rangers could potentially gather at the trade deadline. And even so, it might not, because this defense is so poisoned that, you know, you need to make big changes. And we talked about this a little bit on the show with Pat, who had called in last week. I don't know if everybody on this episode or the show trusts Vigneault to utilize these players properly. And that's kind of where we are right now. Are we going to see another case where the Rangers give a lot to get a guy like Shattenkirk, and then they turn around and they're just like, oh, you know what, he's going to be a third pair guy and he's going to see some power play time? Or is this going to be a situation where the guy is going to actually play and he's going to make some replacements? And we're not going to have an answer for that until we have an answer for that. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to like what we're going to hear. So unless you guys think I'm wrong, Beth, you can jump in on that one.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, we're always going to keep circling back to this because it is the big unknown. It is the only thing that could possibly, shift the team's potential in some sort of meaningful way. And, you know, we're waiting to see, but, you know, we've been hurt before, and that's why, you know, we're not that hopeful. I mean, the best thing to pin our hopes on is the good choices that Gorton seems to have made on offense, which would suggest that maybe he's gearing up to move to the other side of the ice, but, no way to know. But it is probably going to reveal a lot. And, you know, I think it's going to be disappointing when Clendenning sits. And I think the fact that we all know that that's going to happen, even though Vigneault has proven himself ready and willing to sit or shuffle everybody on the offense.
Including Kreider now.
I know, fourth liner Chris Kreider. But, you know, if that's where we're stuck, that's when we're stuck. If that's a piece that we have to keep using, and, you know, I've been watching too much Chopped, but it's like, you know, opening your basket and getting, you know, octopus or something, but it's in every basket. It's in the appetizer basket. It's in the dessert basket. And just like, you've got to make something with octopus. And if you guys don't watch Chopped, or if nobody else watches Chopped, this isn't making sense to anybody. But anyway, it's an ingredient
Chopped
that you can't get rid of.
I know what you're talking about.
So
you have to work with it, yeah.
Exactly. You have to work with it. And you can't just chop it up into tiny pieces, apparently, throw it in the fryer later and sprinkle it on top. Because it's a first-line defenseman. So clearly this analogy has reached its end and somebody else should talk now.
Michael?
I was just thinking about the last time I watched Chopped. yeah. I used to really like old school Iron Chef too. Back before it got all corporate, man. I get what you're saying. It's a really interesting thing to kind of gauge where the Rangers' defense is now. And something that's helpful to kind of understand what's wrong with the defense is to look at, you know, where it's come. But the Rangers are kind of a unique case just because last year the defense, you know, there's so much anxiety about how, you know, guys like how Keith Yandle is being used and the fact that Girardi was still around. Boy, Dan Boyle sure is old. And Kevin Klein, you know, continuing his counting stats, helping to cloud the fact that he's, you know, he's a third pair NHL defenseman now. And this year, it's a weird thing to think, but I don't think the defense is, you know, improved from where it was last year. And last year's defense wasn't really good enough in a lot of ways. So, you know, you look at what assets the team has available and beyond Clint Benning, and it's a really interesting feeling about, because I wrote a story today for FanRag where I was looking at trades from last year's deadline that went wrong, and one of the ones that made the cut for me was the trade of Chris Russell. And even a guy like Russell, who everyone knew up and down, like, hey, this guy is a black hole possession-wise. He's an undersized defenseman who's really only known for blocking shots. Sounds familiar, I don't know. Maybe the Rangers fans, but, you know, what did he demand at the trade deadline? Because he was a name and because block shots looked really good to the Dallas Stars. You know, he demanded two prospects, including a former first-round pick and a second-round pick that could have become a first-round pick. So I was thinking in my head, like, all right, well, if the market price is anything like that this year, then I would be terrified if the Rangers trade something, a package to try and improve the defense. Just because there's nothing, you know, we've said it so many times now, but there's nothing left on the, you know, in the pantry to, no more horses left in the stable to offer up here. It's, you know, there's not a lot the Rangers can do to put together a package outside of hoping that, like, hey, you want, like, 3 fourth liners? Because we can do that. You know, on many teams, the guys the Rangers are playing in the fourth line would be third liners. But it's an interesting thing to look at where the defense is now and where we would expect it to be. But especially kind of looking forward, when you look at how brutal this division is and how, in many ways, how brutal this conference is. Just before the podcast, I was saying to Joe and Beth, the only team in the Eastern Conference with a losing record is the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I would have lost everything I owned betting against that happening. It's just, how is that the case? But that's just the way, you know, hockey is this season. For whatever reason, the Metropolitan Division is, you know, we don't talk about it a lot. The Rangers are the top wild card seed right now. But that's because the Metropolitan Division is a freaking killing field. You know, it's there's going to be five teams from the Metro going to the playoffs. So I don't know if you wanted to transition into that, Joe. I'll leave it up to you.
Well, I was thinking it was an opportunity to just, you know, to kind of move into that direction, which is, as you guys know, some of our Patreon subscribers can send us the thoughts that they want to hear on the show, and they get the priority. And one of the questions was, right now the Rangers are the number one wild card spot, which would pull them from the Metro bracket and move them to the Atlantic bracket. And would that be something that would be favorable to the Rangers? And before we even get into that, just two things. The first thing is, the Rangers are in the first wild card spot. So obviously, whatever good fortunes they had in the beginning of the year has sort of turned upside down and changed things, if you will. The Rangers were at one point one of the best teams in the NHL. Now they're sitting in the first wild card spot. Some of that is because, like Mike said, the Metropolitan Division is just a killing field right now. The second thing is Montreal, who is at the very top of the Atlantic Division with 63 points, would not be – they would be tied with the Rangers for the wild card spot in the Metropolitan. So that is just how much of a gap there is between these two conferences. Yes, it would be good for the Rangers to back their way into the playoffs right now, into that wild card spot. You get Montreal, you get Ottawa, you get Toronto as of right now. You know, you avoid the Washingtons, the Columbus, and the Pittsburghs. But we kind of talked about this 2 weeks ago. If you're a true contending team, I don't care who you're playing in the playoffs. You don't care who you're playing in the playoffs. You just want to play anyone because you don't care. You think the team is good enough to handle anyone. And I get it. You might want to play someone other than another team, but you're not scared of anyone. And I am terrified of a 7-game series, really, against anyone, but especially against the Metropolitan Division. Now, I don't think the Rangers would tank a la the Islanders last year, but I don't also see the Rangers making some ridiculous run to – I mean, I could see Columbus falling off, I guess, but Washington and Pittsburgh are just well-oiled machines at this point. And they're terrifying. They really are. And, Mike, you can jump in on this one now.
You know, me or Beth?
You.
No,
well,
go ahead.
You know,
Beth, I was thinking about things being greased up. I think the Rangers, even though, you know, we've seen what the Rangers have done against Washington in the past, and, you know, there's been plenty of success there, it's still, they're a very spooky, spooky team. Early on, we were celebrating the Rangers' goal differential in the season, and Washington, Rangers have a plus 40 goal differential. Washington has a plus 54, but more importantly, at even strength, the Rangers has a plus 9 goal differential, and Washington has a plus 40. So if you think about, you know, where hockey games are won, it's at even strength. And comparing those numbers, you know, at face value to each other is pretty telling about which of those teams is more, you know, more of a force to be reckoned with. I haven't gotten to watch a lot of Montreal this year, particularly for understanding the impact of Radulov and what that team looks like. I know they've been without Gallagher for a while, so they're not at 100%, but they scare me a little bit less, but it's, I do understand Joe's point as to if you're a real competitor, come what may, you'll play who you'll play. But just seeing how the kind of peaks and valleys of the season, I don't really have that nonchalance with the Rangers. I think there's a real sense of, you know, that you definitely want to be playing yourself into that Atlantic bracket just because it's going to be less difficult. It's going to, you know, especially a team like the Rangers who looks like they could be built, you know, if the right guys get hot at the right time and, you know, if they hop on the right hot hands and all that good stuff, they could go pretty far. But it's a weird thing to think that we're only right now a month and a couple of days away from the trade deadline. So, you know, as that nears, it's going to be a topic that we can't avoid on the podcast. And I don't want us to talk about it all the time, but really there's no escaping the fact that what happens on the trade deadline is going to determine a lot, and not just what happens this year. It's going to be what it costs. And, you know, the Rangers have a really, really young group of forwards. I mean, there's a lot of teams who have a younger core, especially at forward, than the Rangers do in the league, like Edmonton and, you know, Carolina and all that. But when you look at who the Rangers have, you know, guys who are under 30 years old and or even, you know, 28 years old, it's a pretty young group. And, you know, there's a lot to build on there. But I don't know. I'm curious, you know, if Beth would rather see us play the Capitals or the Canadians at this point, just because, I mean, if the series happened today and the rosters were what they were, I think for me it's a no-brainer. But what do you think, Beth?
No, I agree with that. Although I did just give an inordinate amount of useless thought to how much fun, how the Rangers could win a Super Bowl. Because from where I'm standing, the problem is not that we could beat anybody. We just can't beat anybody four times.
yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, like I'm just so jealous of that, you know, beat them once, move on format right now. Because I think the Rangers would excel and rise to the occasion there. But yeah, I mean, I'd have to go with the Canadians, I think. I just can't imagine. It seems like the safer bet, but again, there's still sort of a wall at the end of that first round in my mind. That I can't really see past. So
that we're even talking about this, I believe, says a lot about the state of the team. And I don't. It's very difficult for me to sit there and say. A lot of people are like, oh, when everybody comes back and they're all healthy, it's going to be awesome and it's going to be just like it used to be. But not necessarily the case. It's. When you look at what the Rangers have kind of become, it's not necessarily something that's, oh, look, the Rangers are going to start scoring 50 goals again and it's going to be amazing. It's not like that. The Rangers have a serious issue on defense with other teams being able to relatively rapidly figure out what to do to shut them down. And over the course of a 7-game series, you better believe that you're going to have an opportunity to figure those things out. And I think we've seen it from a couple of different teams. Some of the teams in the conference are doing it. And, you know, you throw that neutral zone trap out there and the Rangers kind of become like, well, what the hell do we do? And we'll see. I honestly don't know what we're going to see come the playoffs. I mean, like we've said, I'd be very surprised if the Rangers did not make the playoffs, but I'm not this confident, you know, guns blazing, let's play whoever, I don't give a shit. I'm really not. I think the Rangers have some bigger psychological issues that they're going to have to work their way through. And, you know, I don't know.
Also,
I
was just looking up some ages. There's no – what other goalies in the Metropolitan are – over 30. Lundqvist is going to be 35 by the time the playoffs start. Price is 29. Holtby's 27. You know, it matters when you've got that kind of, you know, relentless schedule. You know, it matters whoever you are. But, you know, even if we've got, and I'm not going to say the top of his game. That phrase is starting to make me a little bit crazy. Even if Hank is playing at his absolute best, that's still a 35-year-old guy playing a ridiculously, you know, body-abusing position for however many games at age 35.
And that's another reason to kind of wish for the path of least resistance, too.
So say again,
Michael.
Sorry.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's another reason to kind of cheer and wish for the path of least resistance, meaning going into the Atlantic bracket where, you know, the teams, you know, after Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto, I mean, and then the next Atlantic team that could challenge in there, but they're a little bit far behind. They're, what, 1 point behind is Boston. So, you know, it's Boston, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. and take playing them over Washington, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Philly any day.
Yeah. It's, again, that we're having the discussion says a lot about the state of the Rangers, probably more about the state of the Rangers than what a lot of people think. Excuse me. And I don't want to, I hope it's, that does not come off as a negative thing. I don't think it's wrong to realistically assume the Rangers are a we are what we are team. But again, you see, the Rangers can't go all in again. They just can't. You don't have that ability because you've done it 3 years in a row, and that's part of the reason why I kind of want to see a trade for a trade of Grabner or even Nick Holden, where you have these guys who are not going to stay at this level forever. Grabner is not going to shoot at 22% forever. Neither is Nick Holden. So if you have the opportunity to move these guys, you should at the very least think about it. And I don't know that there is a small chance that they will continue shooting at that percentage, but the law of averages just says that eventually Grabner is going to slow down.
Shooting 19.75% at even strength is very normal for a guy getting 16 minutes of ice time a night. That's very, you know, God bless what he's doing. I still don't understand how he's doing it, but it's not a horse that's going to run forever.
Well, and he couldn't do it last night either. I mean, the Kings just didn't. Grabner makes people pay for mistakes, no matter how small they are. He makes teams pay. Just that one puck that's in the wrong place for however many seconds, or, you know, just a few inches off. And he didn't get that opportunity last night. So, again, that's kind of, I mean, I don't know. Do you guys agree? I mean, I think that's where most of his, he's the, you know I go too hard on the bird metaphors.
Bird
but,
metaphors?
You know,
have you ever used a bird metaphor? Outside
of
the duck?
Butter off a duck. There's one.
Oh, that was, maybe that one just stuck with me. But, you know, I mean, he's going to swoop in and pick up whatever, you know, you leave vulnerable for seconds. And I don't know, I feel like this just makes me feel like we should talk about poor Jimmy Vesey, and that's his title by the way now. He's not the Bucks.
Well,
he's poor Jimmy Vesey.
Beth
was ahead of the game.
It sounds like the beginning of a bad nursery rhyme, doesn't it?
Yeah, poor it Jimmy does Vesey. I like that. It even has a sweet kind of like broken rhyme, that slant rhyme. Poor Jimmy Vesey.
Fell down the hill,
about him on Twitter, and it's just he's kind of hit a wall. I think he's admitted he's hit a wall.
The college wall.
But the reality of the situation is when AV continues to use the fourth line as a punishment, which is sort of something that he's been doing.
Well, very few coaches use it as a vacation.
Well, some of them do. You know, some of them think it's nice down there with the other crab people.
I was just waiting to make my if Beth's avian puns and references kept going, that your GM should be Dave Talon.
Ugh, God, can you imagine?
I'll just be quiet now. I apologize.
You can kind of attribute VC's drop-off to that it is kind of a wall. How many games do you play in college? 40-something? 42? 48, maybe? So we're kind of at that
30.
Point in the NHL season. This is a tough road to climb. And it's part of the reason why Hayes' skills were, and what he was able to do was so jaw-dropping as a rookie, because you see a lot of guys tail off. There's a reason why it's like that, because it happens. And it would not shock me but again, this is where I get fired up. You fired me up now, Beth. Thank you. He's tired. It would not be the dumbest thing in the world to say, hey, VC, you're going to sit out a couple of games. Take a breather. Relax. Sit in the press box. Watch
a couple of games.
And, I mean, unless he thinks that maybe the All-Star break is going to rejuvenate him, and maybe that's the thought process. But I would not be against Vigneault telling him, you're going to sit a game or two every now and again. You'll play every 8 of 10 games for the rest of the year, and then you'll play every playoff game. Lord knows there'll probably only be four of those. And that's the end of that. But they don't. And it's something that he seems reluctant. Vigneault is like the king of the healthy scratch, but not when it makes sense. Not when you're going to rest Girardi on a back-to-back or try to rotate Clendenning in or whatever. And I think that's part of the reason why it's so frustrating, at least for me. Maybe I'm an idiot. I mean, you know, the people with the pitchforks and the torches still have not found him in the trees, so.
Well, I think there's something to be said about, you know, it's been, I was just looking at, you know, his game log. It's been six games since VZ put a shot on net. That's, for a guy who, you know, I think it's not at all, you know, offensive or outside the lines to say that he's an offense-only kind of a guy right now at this stage in his career. That's a crazy run of games where six games without a shot. I mean, and he hasn't picked up a point since the last day of December. In that goal against Colorado in Colorado. So, you know, it's a weird thing to. I guess in many ways it also highlights just how good Booch is. But when you look at, you know, how VZ has looked in against his ice time's been really low, but, you know, Vigneault used him a bit more against the Kings than he had been using him. But, you know, his ice time in the last six games, you know, 12 minutes, 8 minutes, 39, 6 minutes, 18, 11 minutes, 2, 11 minutes, 42, 14 minutes, 10. Now, this is a guy who's not. What would be the harm in sitting him out? You know, I'm kind of with Joe here. If you're going to play the kid 10 minutes every night, you know, maybe let him get some rest, especially, you know, I know there's, you know, with Kevin Hayes out, there's, you know, a little less flexibility with the depth of that forward, you know, and having to play Pumple, but. It's a weird thing. AV has a lot of really, really peculiar coaching patterns. And when you see something like, oh, demote Kreider to the fourth line, hey, look, Pumple scored, you know, it's very quickly kind of erased, you know, Etch-a-Sketch gets shaken, and you're like, ah, you know, it was really weird, but look, Pumple scored. But at the same time, it's like, no, hold on. Why was Pumple in that situation? Are you suggesting that Kreider, who is just Pumple, but with 50 pounds of muscle, couldn't have done that, you know?
That pass was so good that, I mean,
yeah.
I won't say
well,
I
and then Girardi
it, but...
had a good breakout pass, too, to get to that point. But this is the thing that bothers me, because here's what would probably happen. Vigneault will sit VC, but we'll never know why. We'll only be able to surmise off of whatever we can guess. It would be, like, if you're going to go that route, just say, hey, listen, the kid is used to a 40-game schedule. We're in game 45. He's tired. I'm giving him a couple of nights off. That's all. This isn't a punishment. This isn't anything. I want him fresh for the playoffs. But it won't get to that point because that's not the way that he operates. It's not the way that Vigneault goes about his business. And look, I get it. He plays his cards close to his vest, and it is what it is. But the reality of the situation is the people are hungry for information. They want to know. This is not... You are not the president guarding or potentially right now not guarding governmental secrets. You're like lower body injury, upper body injury, all that nonsense that we live with every single day. There's so much more to that aspect of things. A lot of other coaches who are much more willing to give that information. And like the Senators, for example, just announced that they would be releasing cap hit numbers for all their signings. And that's something the Rangers don't do. It's like a team-wide effort to keep as much information off the public eye as possible. And
fruitlessly, might I add, yeah.
Well, sure, in a sense, fruitlessly, but also in a sense, we don't necessarily have a media that is prying, a media that, you know, goes in and breaks those stories. Larry Brooks is the closest thing we have, and even he's kind of died down a little bit in that regard. So I would love to see a more open and a more explanative Alain Vigneault, but we're not going to get that, I don't think, ever. So it's up to us to go in and just say, like, all right, listen, this is what we think is going to happen. And everyone goes, oh, it's coach speak. You can't read into it. But more often than not, things that Mignot says where you're like, huh, that sounds kind of – that doesn't sound smart. I hope he doesn't do that is something that he ends up doing. And listen, I'm certainly splitting hairs. He just won – I think he just coached his 1,100th game, has won like some of the – one of the highest winning percentages in that total. And I am not trying to take away from the fact that Mignot is a good hockey coach. What I am saying is he has significant flaws that have followed him from Vancouver to New York. And he has also been blessed with two of the better goaltenders in the league. And in the case of Henrik Lundqvist, maybe the best goaltender in the league in their primes. So you need to color in the picture a little bit because it does change things. It really does. It's like saying, that was going to be a terrible analogy. And I'm not going down that road. You have to look at all sides. You really do. Because it's one thing to say, this is a guy who has been a sum of his parts coach and he hasn't coached good teams and they haven't had the pieces there. That's not true. Vancouver was very, very good. A lot of people like to point to Vancouver and say, oh, look at how bad Vancouver got when Vigneault left. Vancouver just got old. He got off that ship as it was sinking. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And they have a terrible general manager, and the Rangers seem to be, they're on the older side too, but in the right places, they're young, and there's still an ability to move forward on this one. And I'm very curious to see what we're going to see out of Jeff Gordon. I really am, because at this point, it could be a ton of things. So,
can I ask, when did fourth line, was it during the injuries that fourth line went? Because, I mean, that was part of the, you know, the superlative conversation at the beginning of the season with the Rangers having four scoring lines. You know, you didn't know who to match up with who because every line could score. When did it go back to being, you know, you were bad, go here for the rest of the game line? And what, why would you not go back to the four scoring lines, never let up thing?
I think now I'm
confused enough to not remember who scored what goal when, since the lines haven't been consistent. So
yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong there, but it does seem like it's becoming the timeout corner again.
Ooh, the timeout corner. Get in the timeout corner. Mike, what are your thoughts on that? I think it was the injury.
I think the best way, you know, if someone has the time to sit down and work through it is to really look at, because to me it boils down to shifts per game and ice time. And I think early on in the season, it may have been just the illusion that they were getting more ice time because in the preseason and in October, the fourth line and third line were looking so damn good and were, you know, piling up points. But, you know, and lately we've seen, like, when I just read out, you know, VZ's time on ice, like, there was a time in the season where no Rangers forward would get, you know, below 10 minutes of ice time a game. And now, you know, we see pretty regularly guys like, you know, Lindbergh and, you know, lately, curiously enough, VZ, the guys who are played for 10 minutes or less. And, you know, when, for whatever reason, Vigneault is like shortening the bench or, you know, he'll just decide, you know, like, you know, he doesn't want to see player X, Y, or Z. And the thing that's always very vexing to me is like what the parameters are for him demoting players. Like we've seen it for, you know, bad penalties. We've seen it for like really simple or kind of goofy turnovers. I'll never really forget the, Brady Shea had a pretty really clear and obvious interference in front of the Rangers net, you know, about a week ago, I think. And then he just kind of sat for the rest of the period at the end of the bench. And it was just like, oh, all right, well, that's his way of saying to a young guy, you know, like, hey, you messed up, kid. Go have a seat. You know, here's a sippy cup. Here's a coloring book. Figure it out. But when it's someone like Kreider, who, you know, Kreider is the best possession driving forward on the team. In many ways, he's the best forward on the team, not named Zuccarello. Like, kicking him down to to, you know, the fourth line against a team that you need a guy with Kreider's speed and size against the Kings, it was a really head-scratching thing. So I'm not sure we can really, without really digging into numbers, if we can figure out when that shift happened. But I agree with you, Beth. It definitely did happen at some point where all of a sudden the expectations, I think, and the identity and role of that line changed. And it's not just because, you know, the personnel has moved around a little bit with the injuries. I think there's something more to it. It's just like AV couldn't help making that line a line where, you know, unless you're one of his kind of chosen guys who he'll march out there almost regardless of what's going on, you know, insert Jesper Fast joke here. But it's those are the guys who he turns that into really like a line that sends a message. You know, there's a message being sent to guys like Vizi where, you know, the 14 minutes of ice time he got against the Kings was the most he's had in 8 games or something. And this is for a guy who very well could be an important part of the future of the team. And this is his rookie season. So I don't know what lessons there are to be learned from that. Granted, I've never coached and especially never coached an NHL team, but that did shift at some point, that the identity and role of that fourth line. You said you think it came about from the injuries, Joe?
Well, yeah, because that ended the promised land of 12 skill forwards and turned it into, hey, we have a fourth line again. And
yeah, but why didn't as we convert back into the 12 skilled forwards when, you know, even, you know, prior to the Hayes injury, you know, the Rangers were, for the most part, healthy outside of Staal before, you know, before Hayes' injury. I know Pumphol has only recently gotten back, but, you know, with Buchnevich, Zibanejad both back and Nash back, when those guys all came back in that same little window, the Rangers were back to that kind of opening night, holy crap, look at all this talent in the forwards line. But we haven't seen it kind of return to that.
Well, and this is where the way that it I can't even pretend to know how other coaches coach in the league because I just don't have the time or the energy to go around and watch and see what, you know, the Jack Capuano's, although that's obviously a terrible example right now, but the Mike
Joe.
Babcock or the you threw me off now. I had other names and now I don't. Anyway, I don't even pretend to have the time to go through and try to see how they coach. What I know is that Tom Rennie, John Tortorella, and Vigneault have all used the fourth line as sort of a punishment. And it's alarming because Vigneault uses the fourth line as a defensive unit now. So when you punish players onto it, doesn't really make sense, but whatever. And for the first glorious few weeks of the season when there were no injuries, we did not see that able to be used as a punishment because Michael Grabner was down there. Brandon Peary, when he was actually scoring goals consistently, was down there. So there was no – you put Buchnevich down there, nobody really batted an eye. You put Kreider down there, it was just another skill line. And now – they kind of, with the injuries and with Pumphol and Peary and Fast and Lindberg, it kind of has worked itself into a no man's land in a lot of respects. And Vigneault takes advantage of that. He Vesey's been down there forever, and you're not using it as a defense first line with Vesey down there. At least you shouldn't. But that's the way that they're deployed, and I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing a VC struggle in the first place. It's tough. I mean, think of all the players that, like, Kevin Hayes spent how long on the fourth line last year with Tanner Glass? And people are like, well, he's not producing, so where else is he going to go? Well, maybe he's not producing because Tanner Glass is his line mate. Have you thought of that, you friggin' genius? It's not hard to put those things together. Now, there is no Tanner Glass anchor on this fourth line, as much as Ron Bugay wants there to be, and he does not stop tweeting about it. But I am still of the mind that Pumple isn't exactly creating a ton of offense. Peary needs offense created for him because he hasn't gotten shots off on his own. He needs those passes, like you saw from Stepan last night. So where is VC supposed to generate this offense on that line? And that's kind of the question. That's what it becomes.
Well, something else to consider is the fact that Grabner did start, if unless I'm mistaken, I think Grabner did start the season down there. And, you know, because the kids were, VZ and Buchnevich were used in the top nine, unless I'm mistaken. So maybe there's something to be said about, you know, Grabner being removed from there and that kind of changing that line, you know, that line's role and identity. Because right now it seems like when Grabner's shooting at the net, he just, for him, it's like shooting at the ocean. The puck's going to go in. Or it's going to go off the crossbar. But it's, I don't know. I want very much to understand, like, the methodology and, like, the what Vigneault is hoping to kind of harvest from putting a guy like VZ in that role, just because it's...
Harvest.
Yeah, well, what do you expect in a harvest? But it's important to me just because it's when you look at a guy like VZ who comes from being, you know, the stud of his college hockey team and being one of the best players in the nation, you know, and being as good as he is, putting him in a role on the fourth line and asking him to do stuff like, I'm not sure he's going to get a crash course in NHL defense by being screwed over, and every time he makes a mistake, his ice time gets cut in half. And that's kind of where he is right now. And it's a really, it's not a road that will get him to where he needs to be. He needs to be in, you know, a scoring line role or in a sheltered role, kind of like, you know, the role where, you know, the Miller Hayes Grabner line was, where it's just that line always got, you know, it bled shots and it got its ass kicked in possession, but they always got chances on the rush and they always created high danger scoring chances. But unfortunately, when Hayes was healthy, you didn't want to tinker with that line just because for whatever reason, they always made it work. So I don't know. It's a really weird thing watching VZ kind of, very ironically, according to Beth's, bizarre fable that she made up before, roll downhill and on the depth chart here, you know, poor Jimmy VZ rolling down the hill, because I don't know where he's going to end up again.
We could sing a song about that. Jimmy VZ rolling down the hill. He rolls, he's rolling down the hill. Oh, there goes Jimmy rolling down the hill. Jimmy rolling down the hill.
That was quite impressive, Joe.
Yeah, Joe, that was, I have to admit, that was a 9 out of 10.
We have our own folk songs now.
Easily. You just rolled uphill with that song, my friend.
Oh, my God, it feels so good.
But, yeah, this is like the first compliment I've ever paid you on the podcast. This feels uncomfortable for me.
I don't know what to do. I should end the show immediately. Save it on my head.
But, you know, it's easy. I think one goal in his last 19 games and no shots in his last six. And we all know why he's here. He's 11 goals in 47 games, and with that drought, he's here to score goals. And if you're putting him in that role, he's not going to do that. He's not going to score goals if he's playing with Oscar Lindberg, playing 8 minutes a night on the fourth line, with or without Joe's great song.
The thing that just ran through my head was he's here to score goals and punch Nazis.
And I'm all out of
I don't think he's doing
and punching nothing.
It's the first time I've ever cheered for assault in my life.
I keep forgetting VZ's there, and then all of a sudden he'll sort of swoop by, and I'll be like, oh, Jimmy VZ, and then he's gone again.
I mean,
so, yeah, exactly.
If he scores just 9 more goals this year, which I think is feasible, right? 9 goals?
Very feasible, yeah. Especially if
he's a 20-goal scorer as a rookie.
He escapes the cellar.
Who in the world would turn away a 20-goal scorer as a rookie? And that's something I think a lot of people don't realize. Goals are exceedingly rare. the best players in the league score half a goal a game. So over the course of an 82-game season, you're not going to score in 25% of the games if you're a 20-goal scorer, or excuse me, in 75% of the games if you're a 20-goal scorer. So you do go through those slumps, those ups and downs, and they're normal, and that's great. And well, not great, but it's fine. What you have to do is you have to dig into the other parts of the slump. BC hasn't gotten a shot on goal in 6 games. That is something you should be alarmed about. He's rolling down the hill. If he has 20 shots in those 6 games and no goals, that's a totally different story. It's just not black and white. It's not black and white. It will never be black and white. Hockey is never black and white.
Who was the last Rangers rookie to score 20 goals? If you would allow me to bring the podcast to a grinding halt.
I will.
No, that's probably what we should be talking about.
The last Rangers rookie to score 20 goals.
I have no idea.
Let's see. I think in my head, I know who it is, but I think it was Tony Amonte.
Wait.
No, Puka. After
oh,
him.
God, you have to be right. It has to be. It has to be Puka. Whatever. Okay,
well,
most rookie.
Well,
okay, so most
we...
most
Go
goals as a rookie.
Yeah.
Puka is the earliest name on the list with 30.
Jesus, he had 30.
Amonte had 35, so I wasn't wrong in a sense. I was just wrong.
No,
Tony Granato
had
36. I think it would have to be Puka, because if not Puka,
it's insane.
Well, how often do you have a 20-goal rookie scorer?
Well, that's really what makes a guy like VZ all that more special, is the fact that really, you know, in some ways he's a little below pace now, but, you know, up until this drought where I mentioned, you know, the one goal in 19 games, he was 20 goals in the bank. Like, he was going to get to 20 goals, even with expecting, you know, his pace to slow down after the college wall. Like, I remember looking into that at some point. I was telling myself, oh, yeah, he could still do it. He'll still get to 20 goals. And it's not going to happen if he's getting 9 minutes of ice time every night, you know, or whatever the hell.
Oh, my God.
So
this is amazing. You ready for this? So I'm trying to find actual definitive proof, and I can't anywhere. But everybody has – the Rangers website has, like, records. A player who played in 1951-1952, a rookie, scored 26 goals for the Rangers. His name, Wally Hergensheimer.
Wally Hergensheimer?
Wally Hergensheimer.
That's got to be a Rangers trivia question somewhere.
We are going to find out more about Mr. Hergensheimer right friggin' now. What did
it
you
sounds
do?
Sounds like the name of a character I would have made up when I was like 11 years old.
The first thing
old.
That comes up when you type it in is obituary, so that's not good.
Oh, boy.
Yes, he has passed
God
away.
Rest his soul.
There's a yes, God rest his soul. Wow, he had a hell of a career. He had, well, maybe not a hell of a career. He had 200 points in 351 NHL games.
5'8", 155.
My goodness.
Oh, wow.
His rookie year, he had 59 points in, or excuse me, he had 38 points in 68 games. Look at him. This guy was pretty good. Traded to the Blackhawks, played for the Buffalo Bisons, Calgary Stampede, the Los Angeles Blades. So those are WHL days. Wally Hergensheimer. My God, what a name. That is a hero.
Of course, now that we've been doing the podcast for forever and we're already in the overtime, I just realized the best way to find the most recent 20-goal season. So if you guys can just get up airtime, I'll slowly but surely find it, unless you don't want to.
Is it Hockey Reference?
No, just going to NHL.com. You can do the stats and then sort by rookies alone, and then just climbing back. Every year.
Oh, my God. Mike is going to be climbing. forever.
Or rather, rolling downhill.
I don't think I could reproduce that song if I wanted to. I would have to listen back.
Yeah, you're
going
to have
to
go back.
That
Jimmy
V we'll
rolling down the hill?
We'll
rolling,
about
rolling.
It, yes.
No, I just went Proud Mary there.
Hayes had 17 in his rookie year.
He was the one that I thought would have been close, but I
Kreider
knew he didn't
and
get
Hayes
there.
Both had 17 as rookies.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anyone else that would even, at least the past few years, would even, you know, come anywhere near that total.
Well, it's another important part of this is the Rangers so rarely, and I know some people, especially Predators and Sabres fans, would be quick to point out that he's not truly a homegrown guy, but Rangers very rarely produce homegrown, you know, forward talent. Derek Stepan, 2010, 2011.
Stepan.
21 goals, 24 assists as a rookie.
And a hat trick his first game.
Other rookies from that Ranger team, Mike Sauer, Zuccarello,
sad,
McDonough,
good.
Dale Weiss,
good.
Grotchev,
sad.
Kolarik,
very sad.
And Brody DuPont.
Oh, my God, the worst.
Yeah. I would not have guessed up on
him. Well,
yeah.
You know what? You get,
so,
you take your shot to get one. The Rangers got their one.
Yeah, so it's been 6 years since the Rangers had a rookie who had a 20-goal season. That says
a lot.
That says a lot, really. Yeah.
It says a lot about the Rangers and homegrown talent. And young kids, this
you
is
not crazy about
the
B-side.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you're definitely a one-hit wonder, my friend. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
God, both of you.
You're going to have to go on, like, the H1 Storytellers, and everyone's just going to wait for you to do your one good song.
This is...
Do you remember the pop-up video?
What?
Do you
remember the pop-up video?
Oh, man. Those are the days.
I enjoyed it very much. I would like a pop-up Ranger game.
Oh, that would be great.
Pop-up Ranger game. Anyway, this is Bantering the Blue Shirts, where we sing and dance and do other things. Pay for this. Patreon.com/BlueShirtBanter. You can find me at any website /BlueShirtBanter. Beth at Twitter.com/BethMacklin. Mike at DigDeepBSB. And you can also find him on FanRag Sports, because sometimes he writes for the enemy. The enemy. The enemy. Anything else the two of you want to add before I go to sleep because I'm tired?
I think I'm good.
Before Stefan, it was Peter Pruka who had 30 goals and 17 assists.
God, dude, Tom Rennie ruined him.
Also,
wait,
on
so
the podcast
what?
That year was Dominic Moore.
You know who else had a crazy year that year? Aaron Voros.
Who?
He had like 8 goals in the first like 7 games, didn't he?
I'll take a look. I remember Voros, man. Jack posts a lot of old school Rangers pictures. And,
oh, yeah, by the way, he's being fired. I meant to say that on the show for his little,
yeah,
I'm going to post a picture of the Kings celebrating the Stanley Cup victory and the game threat. That is not okay.
Yeah, the Facebook comments were not are not good.
No. Well,
Voros wasn't on the team that year, apparently.
God damn it, Voros.
All
right.
That was
Yager's
123-point year.
Ooh, that was a good year. It really was a good year. They made the playoffs for the first time. Then they got swept, and I was miserable, but whatever.
Thank you, everybody who writes lovely comments on Patreon and iTunes
and
tells your friends about the podcast. You guys are the best.
Yeah, please
go rate
us. Give us 5 stars. A couple of people gave us 1 stars because they're rude, but you can give us 5 stars.
really? People did
like iTunes. Podcasting. Yeah, they said that we were whiners. They're crap people, whatever. Next week we may
That's
have
so
a surprise. We may have a sponsor for the show. I'm working on it with Blog Talk Radio. We'll see. It will surprise you who it is. No, it's not porn.
Is it Loot Crate? Because that didn't work.
What?
I'm going to bed.
Loot Crate? Because that didn't work.
It's not Loot Crate, but we probably should not. And now it's Loot Crate. They may be coming back.
Do you know what Fleshlight is, Joe?
I do. Beth, do you know what it is?
Wait, what was the question?
Just say yes.
I don't know. Now I'm scared.
You should be very scared. Yeah. You should not trust us. But
yeah. It's
all right,
best
we love
you
all. You
just walk away. We love you all.
Not
I apologize for everything.
You know. Yeah, please pay for patrons. Patreon.com/FuturePenter. Love you all.
Bye.
Patreon.com/FuturePenter.